It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a new survey of Wisconsin businesses shows that their outlook on the economy is improving a bit. We'll talk about what that means for the state's workforce. First July is National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. And Wisconsin has something in common with pretty much every other state in having troubling disparities in mental health treatment for people of color. A group of Wisconsin health research organizations called Healthy Metric released a report last month identifying many of those disparities around the state and found that Black adults had the highest rate of screening for clinical depression but don't always have the same access to mental health care. Last year, the rate of suicide among Black residents of Milwaukee County hit a 10-year high, and health groups and community leaders across the state are working toward reducing barriers to proper diagnosis and treatment. Our next guest is here to help us better understand why these disparities exist and what we can do to try and overcome them. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think causes these racial disparities in mental health? Do you have ideas to try and solve some of these issues? If you're a person of color, I'd love to hear about your experiences with mental health care. And whoever you are, if you're in a part of the state where you've had trouble accessing care, love to hear from you as well. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Keddy Thertis is an associate clinical professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health and a psychiatric consultant at UW Health Pain Management Clinic. Dr. Thertis, welcome to Central Time.
Hello, thank you for having me.
When we talk about disparities in mental health care for people of color, can you give us a sense of what that looks like, how that actually works in practice for people here in Wisconsin?
Yes. So Wisconsin, if you look across the board compared to the rest of the nation, there are some concerning aspects in terms of disparity that are worse for people of color in the state compared to the rest of the states. There are some things that might be better based on access to insurance, on recent reports, and the expansion of Medicaid. But in general, across the board, there's higher rates of less access to healthcare and a significant impact from the societal and psychological structures that stem from racism.
Can you talk a little bit about access to treatment and what we see around the state when it comes to sheer, like if somebody recommends you get healthcare, mental health care, I should say, is it there for you?
Yeah, so interestingly, if you look at everyone across the board, most adults have challenges navigating just understanding the insurance structure and how to find care. And since COVID-19, the access to care has been exacerbated across the board as well. Prior to COVID-19, there are a lot of limitations, and the need has expanded since then in terms of higher rates of depression and anxiety. And it seems like in underserved communities, we're seeing even higher rates among Black people of depression, or screening for depression at least. And so this is going to have a direct impact on the ability to navigate care. Even when you're struggling with your good health, you can have access issues that can stem from your own mental illness, and that can make it a lot more difficult. Right now in Wisconsin, the Parity Act was helpful in expanding Medicaid, but that doesn't always line up with the availability of clinicians. It doesn't always line up with the availability of people who look like you in access to care. And ideally, you would have a clinician with a similar background. This is not always feasible, but this would improve diagnostic assessment and engagement in care in a culturally informed way.
I wanted to ask about that. I'm sorry. I wanted to dig into that in particular, Dr. Thertis. What can we do to have a wider variety of people entering into to becoming practitioners so that people have that option if they need it?
I think there's a good, strong movement towards awareness in Black and Brown communities for the importance of mental health. It's even changed since I first started in school and in training. The amount of awareness has expanded, and it's seen also in social media, which can have a positive and negative impact. But I think stemming from the clinical standpoint of having policy that improves the pipeline of clinicians from minoritized communities and communities of color into college, into medical school, into psychological programming, and also to think about restructuring healthcare in a way that opens up avenues for wellness beyond just the clinic setting and the academic setting and into the community, where there's more opportunities for community empowerment and redefining wellness efforts beyond just the clinic.
We're talking to Dr. Ketty Theridis, Associate Clinical Professor in the Department of Psychiatry at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, and a psychiatric consultant at UW Health Pain Management Clinic. Looking at mental health care disparities here in Wisconsin, you can join in with your questions, maybe your experiences, at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Theridis, can you talk about what that might look like, mental health care, not just being in a clinical setting, in the psychiatrist's office, in the community? What could that look like?
So there's been a lot of work about looking at peer providers, people who can function to help people navigate mental health, mental wellness, basics of being mentally attuned to what could be preventative care rather than reactive care. If you look at the medical model, it can function in a very reactive manner where we deal with a problem after it's manifested. But looking at community efforts to engage people in education and awareness about what could look like the early signs of being unwell, deconstructing what unwellness means in the Black community especially, there's a impetus to be seen as strong, and that if there's any mental health condition, you can have a sense of weakness. If you're religiously based, it can lead to a sense of feeling like you're not believing enough in God or losing faith in religion and God. And so it can be really destabilizing force to reckon with when you feel like you could have mental health issues, but also even understanding what that looks like and how early care and understanding could decrease a lot of distress, and opening up to others in ways that are supported in other areas of life, such as churches. There's really interesting work in Wisconsin by different groups who deal with having mental health care and medical care access in a way to reach people in a barbershop. There's young women's groups in camps. There is engagement by people to build understanding through a way to avoid going to the ER when you're in mental health crisis, and perhaps seeking out a more welcoming space in the community related to the church. So there's really a lot of opportunities, and that's happening in Wisconsin right now, to help that process along, to decrease that stigma, improve access.
That's interesting. I've talked to people who have done similar projects in rural or small town Wisconsin, trying to overcome the attitude that, you know, hey, we're self-reliant, we don't need mental health care, and actually peer support, people who have been through it themselves, reaching out to other people and saying, hey, it's not bad. There's not a stigma if you seek mental care. Are there things like that you've seen working with people of color with peer support?
Yes, I think there's a better connection to be had when it's coming from someone who's been through what you've been through, both in just understanding of what you could be looking at in yourself. How has someone arisen above the issue? How did they learn about their issue in the first place? How to navigate when you should look to a physician or a clinician or a therapist, or to other avenues of wellness that help improve your sense of self-agency, which is an aspect of depression care too, in terms of behavioral activation. So I think that's in a way better, you know, better swallowed by people who may be afraid due to significant real history we have to reckon with in terms of medicine and disparities and racialized approaches to care that were based on erroneous biological ideas of race that led to stereotypes and bled into physicians and clinicians' ideas of particular people's races and their characteristics. If it's coming from someone from your community or from a faith leader or from somebody who's been through what you've been through and can meet you at your level and where you're at, you can see better outcomes. And there's work that's being done here to help facilitate that community support in terms of education and classwork at UW.
We're talking to UW Health psychiatrist Dr. Ketty Thertis about mental health disparities in Wisconsin facing people of color. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. How can we make access to mental health care, to screenings, more equitable? Have you been involved in a peer support type program in your community, wherever you are in the state? What questions do you have for our guest? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Dr. Ketty Thertis, Associate Clinical Professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, and a psychiatric consultant at UW Health Pain Management Clinic. She's with us today to talk about some of the causes of and potential solutions for mental health disparities facing people of color in Wisconsin and around the country. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about access to mental health care? Do you think we're doing enough to screen for mental health concerns? If you work in the health profession, do you see enough screenings, enough access to services out there? Join in with your experiences or your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Thertis, I know some of your own work involves emergency rooms. And when someone comes in with a mental health emergency or a physical health problem, for that matter, maybe related to a mental health concern, helping connect them with services, not just treating the physical injury. What kind of things are you hoping to see?
So historically, Black people enter mental health care more frequently through emergency and involuntary ways than the general population. So this is an aspect that's near and dear to my heart, working in the emergency room, having to navigate someone who's coming in crisis, who may or may not have an awareness of what's going on, in an emergency room that can be loud and destabilizing and scary, with potentially law enforcement involvement. And law enforcement involvement may relate to also involuntary admissions. And typically, as a psychiatrist, you don't want to see someone in a hospital unless they absolutely need to be. The goal is always to promote wellness in the community. But at times, some people need treatment and some people might not understand it. Historically, law enforcement have the power to bring people and commit people against their will. In Wisconsin, there has been movement recently, in Dane County at least, to have less of a police presence involved in mental health crisis responses in the community. When someone calls for help, having an alternative to police and having clinicians who are mentally health trained for crisis management, who are not police officers, who can have a more holistic and less intimidating approach to someone in crisis, and to avoid some of the fears that can happen when a police presence is involved. So I think there is good movement towards that. I think it stemmed a lot from understanding the history and understanding the needs of people, and also to have work that's trauma informed as well, given that there is a higher chance of having trauma and trauma responses in the Black community, particularly in underserved areas.
Going from emergency rooms to primary care, I know there have been some efforts to boost screenings, not just for people of color, but across the board for depression and other mental health concerns. Is that something you see as a positive step?
I definitely see it as a positive step. I think a lot of work has been done for improving access to care outside of a psychiatric clinic and embedding it into a medical clinic, where people might feel more comfortable reviewing their care from a holistic approach when their primary doctor is attentive to both their mind and their body, and being able to practice in a way where you're looking at the physical symptoms, but having attention to the mental health aspects of it, the role that the depression can play in the presentation of medical illness, and having access to what is, you know, has been built as collaborative care models, where there are mental health clinicians that help to support and discuss cases with primary care doctors to provide psychiatric and behavioral health treatment recommendations, whether that's diagnostic assessment, whether that's medication recommendations, or whether that's therapy recommendations, to improve health outcomes and have people have access to care in a way that they don't necessarily have to get to the psychiatric clinic, because we do have to be aware that while we'd like to have more psychiatrists, that's not the case both nationally and globally. More psychologists, that's not the case both nationally and globally. And if you look at the breakdown of even Black psychiatrists and psychologists, the percentage of Black psychiatrists is not representative of the population. And that's the same for psychologists as well.
Talking to Dr. Ketty Thirdist with the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at mental health disparities in the United States, here in Wisconsin in particular. Dr. Thirdist, getting back to the issue, you just raised again the idea of having more people of color as practitioners themselves. People might think, well, why does that really matter? If somebody's trained, if somebody is skilled in dealing with mental health problems, it shouldn't matter. Why does it matter?
It's very important historically. It doesn't always matter. And sometimes you have to have the reality of who you're doing, and you can connect with people even if there's differences. But in general, the more informed someone is of someone's background, of their cultural leanings, of their religious leanings, the more informed you can be about how they're navigating their world. And so it avoids overdiagnosis. There's an excellent example of what misdiagnosis can look like. In Michigan, Black protesters in the civil rights era were overdiagnosed with schizophrenia because they felt like their concerns about racism and the structure of racism and its impact were delusional. And so Black patients were overdiagnosed with schizophrenia in the 60s. And this was stemming from a lack of understanding, a lack of awareness, potentially intentional disregard for the experience of Black people. And so it'd be interesting to know if there were Black physicians available at that time or clinicians, would that lead to decreased diagnosis? That's for certain, because there's certain experiences that can be accessed by a culturally informed clinician. So it's not to say that someone has to have someone that looks like them. The reality is that's not going to be the case, but it could go a long way of improving the numbers to have that access be even available for those who would want that or who could benefit from that.
How about deeper structural problems? It's hard as it is to maybe train up a new generation of practitioners and supply more access to care. An even deeper problem might be longer-term structural problems that might lead to some of these problems in the first place. How big a factor are those?
So if you look at what does health and wellness require, and it's multiple issues, multiple points of intervention, starting with the nature versus nurture approach to care and to how people can flourish, you know, how much of it is your disposition, how much of it is your upbringing. It's always a complex interplay of both. But if you look at what we use in psychiatry as a biological, psychological, social, and existential formulation of care, looking at biology that looks at the systems and the access to clean food, clean water, clean air, clean communities, safe communities, access to resources, so employment, jobs, equal pay, a sense of existential belonging.
Thanks so for calling Central Time. Can I get
Sorry, we had a wire cross there, Dr. Thirdist. Sorry about that interruption there. I wanted to ask about, we hear these reports about disparities in things like mental health care among races, I think again and again over time. Do you have a sense that there is a sense of urgency to solve this problem among your colleagues in the health profession and beyond?
Yes, I've definitely noticed a sense of urgency. I think there's been an enhanced sense of urgency in the last few years between the pandemic and the, I guess, racial reckoning that's happened in America. Within my department, I see a lot of effort. And amongst my colleagues, there is also a lot of talk about what we as Black clinicians can do. So I think there's a good energy. I think the work can be challenging because there's so much to be looked at and so much to be fixed. But I think if we focus on our communities and our strengths, and also to respect despite the disparities, that there is an inherent strength to minoritized communities, what has been overcome, and the particular positive aspects of cultures that can promote wellness despite the odds, has to be respected and used in our care.
And just in our last minute, Dr. Theridis, we're talking about people of color with mental health concerns. How important, when we're finding solutions to these disparities, is it to make sure we include people of color with mental health problems in finding those solutions?
I think it is absolutely essential. And that's particular work I'm interested in and would like to move into. I think it's important to fund Black clinicians to do the research and to do the work. I think it's important to engage the community and give a sense of both clinical and civic engagement, a sense of meaningfulness to the work as well, so that despite all the work that has to be done, both clinicians and the population have a sense of agency and support.
Dr. Theridis, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you. Take care. Thank you for having me.
That's Dr. Ketty Theridis, Associate Clinical Professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health and a psychiatric consultant at UW Health Pain Management Clinic. She's with us today to explore disparities in mental health treatment for people of color in Wisconsin and discuss some potential solutions. Coming up after the news, find out what a survey of Wisconsin businesses can tell us about the labor market here in the state. I'm Rob Verrett. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You can follow these conversations all the time online at WPR.org or download the Wisconsin Public Radio app. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Coming up, we learn how to tell if you should take advice or ditch it. First, a new survey from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, or WMC, shows that Wisconsin businesses are less worried about a possible recession than they were 6 months ago, but they're still holding off on hiring new employees. In a few minutes, we'll talk to an economic growth and development expert about what those survey results could tell us about Wisconsin's job market. First, we'll hear from the WMC about what they learned from the 170 businesses they surveyed. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about a recession? If you're a business owner, how does that affect how you hire and what you pay your employees? If you are on the job market, tell us how things are going. If you are in a job, are you happy to stay there for a while based on what's going on now? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Nick Novak is Vice President of Communications and Marketing for Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. I talked to him yesterday. This is a survey of employers you do from time to time at WMC. What stood out to you the most in this edition?
You know, I think the part that on the economic side that stood out to me was the fact that we've asked a number of times, what does your business expect to do as far as employees? Are they going to increase employees, decrease employees? In this survey, 49% of businesses in Wisconsin said they expect to increase their number of employees in the next 6 months. Now, saying that half of businesses are looking to expand, that sounds good when you look at that number just right off the bat, but it's a drop from 68% a year ago and 79% in our summer 2021 survey. And so that number has steadily been coming down, which is obviously a big concern when you're starting to see that hiring is slowing here in Wisconsin. That's a key factor when you're looking at how the health of the economy is and where we might be going in the next 6 months or a year.
Another question you ask of business owners is if they are concerned that a recession could be on the horizon. Some movement on that question as well.
Correct. About half of businesses believe that we are going to see a recession this year. Now, that has dropped from previous surveys. So even though it's, you know, over half of employers who are kind of preparing and expecting a recession, it is lower than what we've seen over the last year or two. And so everything that we've seen in this survey, the Wisconsin Employer Survey that WMC does every 6 months, is kind of good news, bad news. There's some folks who feel good about the Wisconsin economy, but they have some negative views of the U.S. economy. We're seeing hiring slowing, we're seeing wage growth slow, but we're also seeing fewer people expecting a recession. So just a lot of good news, bad news in the data that we're looking at.
A big thing people have been wondering about for a while, Nick, is this labor shortage concerns, like, hey, we're not finding the people we need to keep our shifts open. What did you find out when you asked employers, hey, are you having trouble hiring people these days?
About 75%, so three quarters of Wisconsin businesses believe that they're having trouble finding workers. You know, that's a huge number, but it's actually smaller than what we've seen over the last few surveys. We've been in the mid to high 80% in that question on previous surveys when we've asked it. And so that is a small drop, but there's still certainly a workforce shortage in Wisconsin, and that's going to continue to be a challenge for our state because we simply don't have enough people here to fill all the jobs that we have today and the careers that we're going to create tomorrow as well. And if you look at our population, it's not growing at the rate that we need it to. You know, from 2010 to 2020, we were about half of the national average when it comes to population change at only 3.6%. And then over the last 3 years, our population in Wisconsin has actually shrunk. And so if you don't have a growing population, you can't really have a growing economy.
Do you have, you've done a whole separate report there at WMC on that demographic issue. Are there solutions? It doesn't sound like there would be easy solutions.
Unfortunately, there's no silver bullet to suddenly just make more people appear in Wisconsin. But we think that you need to focus on three things. You need to retain every born and raised Wisconsinite that we can. And so, you know, we need to get young people engaged in the careers and opportunities that are available here in Wisconsin. We also need to attract people into Wisconsin. Over the last 3 years, if you look at our domestic migration numbers, it's gone back and forth a little bit, but we've lost about 11,000 people to other states. You know, that means more people are leaving Wisconsin than coming in, and we need to reverse that trend. So we need to talk about why Wisconsin is a great place to live, to work, to raise a family, and encourage more people to come into Wisconsin and see all of the amazing economic opportunities that we have. And then we need to get more people off the sidelines. Right now, the Wisconsin labor force participation rate is lower than our historic low that we set in the mid-70s. So in 1976, actually, our labor force participation rate was 65.4%. Today, May 2023, which is the latest numbers, it's 65.1. So we're actually lower than that historic low that we saw in the 70s. So we need to find a way to get more people back into the workforce so that we're having more people ready and willing to contribute to the economy. And if we do all of those three things, you know, there's policies that we can implement to get those done. That's something that long-term can hopefully reverse this trend of a slowing population growth and slower economic growth.
One other issue I wanted to get into in the survey, wage growth. With that difficulty in bringing people on board, we saw some businesses paying people more to sign up to work there. What are we seeing with that trend when you survey employers?
Wage growth is definitely slowing down from what we saw right out of the pandemic. As you just mentioned, there were a lot of companies who were desperate to find workers or desperate to retain workers that they already had. And so we saw wages growing at a faster rate than we had really ever seen. That has started to come back a little bit. Businesses are not maybe needing to hire as much because they're kind of seeing some of the tea leaves that the economy is starting to slow down and they're having some concerns about where we might be going. And so they're maybe putting some of those hiring plans on the shelf. If you're not having to hire as many people, you're not having to compete as much, you're not having to drive those wages up at as fast of a rate as what you once were. And so we are seeing the wage growth slow down a little bit. And, you know, as we get more people into the workforce, obviously there will be, you know, a greater supply, which maybe will bring those wage growth numbers down a little bit as well. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into it. But if you look at the economy as a whole, I would say back to what I started with, it's good news, bad news. We're seeing hiring slow down. We're seeing wage growth slow down. But Wisconsin businesses still have a pretty moderate view of the economy overall. So I wouldn't say that we're in dire straits just yet, but I don't know if I'd put my name on this economy right now.
Nick, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's Nick Novak, Vice President of Communications and Marketing for Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. We talked to him about the results of a recent survey of Wisconsin businesses conducted by his organization. Coming up, an economic growth and development expert will help us break down what the survey results and the latest job news tells us about Wisconsin's economy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do things look like in your part of the economy, in your line of work? Having trouble hiring people, or are things settling down now? Have your wages gone up? Have you changed jobs? If you run a business, are you worried about a possible solution? What are you doing when it comes to hiring? Are you able to hire people? Join 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up that conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about a recent survey of Wisconsin businesses, what it can tell us about the job market in Wisconsin. And you can tell us about the job market in Wisconsin at 800-642-1234. Have you changed jobs lately? Have you stuck with what you've got? What's it like out there if you're looking for work, if you're looking to hire people? Love to hear what you're seeing out there right now. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Steve Deller joins us now, professor of agricultural and applied economics at UW-Madison. Steve, welcome back to Central Time.
It's great to visit with you again, Rob.
We got that summary of this report. Now, this is a business owner perception, basically. What stood out to you there, Steve?
I think that his kind of bottom line is the glass is kind of half full. Is, I think, kind of on target, because I think there's a lot of, there's less uncertainty than there was about 6 months ago. I think that a lot of businesses right now, they feel a little bit more comfortable with what's going on. I think there's general consensus amongst economists that we're probably, from a national perspective, going to go into a kind of a soft landing. And I think businesses are starting to respect that. I think a lot of businesses, and this is evident in their surveys, that they're kind of going a wait and see mode right now. If they see an opportunity to expand, they're going to take that, but they're going to go into a wait and see mode.
Now you're in the studio with me,
yes.
Which is fun. You were nodding at some points. You shook your head at a couple points. What stood out to you as things that you'd want to question maybe in what you heard in those survey results?
I think that. You know, I use the term glass half full because I have a little bit stronger, better outlook on what's going to happen to the economy. I think that the guest that you were just talking with would maybe say the glass is half empty. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of a different perspective. But I will tell you that if you ever get economists agreeing on something, then you know there's something there. I mean, we look for reasons to disagree.
Now, let's talk about the job market being tight, or are we starting to loosen up a little? What are you seeing out there?
I think that the number of job openings is still very high from a historical perspective, particularly if you go back before the COVID shutdown. There was kind of a natural churn in the economy, and there were always kind of job openings and whatnot. We're still way above that kind of long-term average, but we're coming down from the peak. So in that regard, I think that WMC is correct in the sense that we're kind of tapering off a little bit, but we're still at very, very high levels from a historical perspective. So there's still a lot of businesses that are trying to hire, looking to hire people. And this is, I mean, depending on what industry you're looking at, I mean, it's getting worse in some industries, it's getting better in other industries. I think that the upward pressure on wages has kind of played out a little bit. I think he's right in the sense that we're going to continue to see wages increase, but at a decreasing rate. I think in terms of the labor force participation rate, I think we got a couple of things that are going on there. I think one is a lot of baby boomers are taking early retirement. They're not sticking around the way they used to. So they're kind of moving out of the labor force by choice. I think that the women's labor force participation rate is back up to where it was, but there's still a constraint because of childcare. Childcare still predominantly falls on women in our society, and we have a serious childcare issue. We are losing people in terms of out-migration, but when you start talking about what do we need to do to kind of reverse that, I think that's where we can have an honest conversation. We tend to be pretty good about pointing out the problem, but not talking about what potential solutions are.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Tim is with us in Hollandale. Tim, hi.
Hi. First point I'd like to make is in southern Wisconsin, west of Madison, people are packing in droves. So I don't see the not so many people in Wisconsin because it's way crowded down here. Two, a lot of people, older people. I'm 56. I'm leaving my job because of pay. The pay has gotten so miserable that most people I know, and I've got a lot of friends, are doing the same thing. We're all sick of it, and we're all quitting our jobs, and we're all going into business for ourselves, just doing little odds and ends. Because there's so many little projects out there a guy can do. But, you know, my wife's in childcare, and that's just ridiculous what they pay for after, you know, 10 hours a day of taking care of kids. So,
and Tim, I want to ask him, what line of work are you in?
I went from construction to maintenance, and I'm getting out of maintenance because there's no money in it. Right. The company I work for has three vice presidents who just got raises.
Tim, thanks a lot for sharing the stories. Okay, a lot there that Tim gave us to work with. He's feeling like he has the ability to leave that job that he doesn't feel pays well enough. Steve, do you think this is a common story?
I think it's a very common story. When you have a unemployment rate, I mean, the Wisconsin unemployment rate now is around 2.4%, which is historic lows. I mean, you have to go back to 1999, 1980 before we come anywhere close to that, and that was 3.1%. So with this record low unemployment rate, you know, although we're coming off the peak in terms of the number of job openings, I mean, it is really ripe for people to say, you know, I'm tired of doing this. I'm going to try something else. Or I can make an extra dollar an hour if I flip over to that job. We're seeing more and more of that. I think the other thing we're seeing is a generational change, is that I think increasingly people that stay in the same job for many, many years is becoming rarer and rarer. I think it's becoming much more common for folks to kind of job hop. And I think it's almost become a cultural thing.
And our caller there also brought up, you know, in his neck of the woods, southern Wisconsin, he said west of Madison, he's seeing plenty of people move in. Now, this overall picture of Wisconsin demographics, it varies from place to place. We've seen a boom in Dane County and the surrounding area, I think. So one size doesn't fit all when we're talking about people coming in and leaving Wisconsin.
That's exactly right. A lot of what's happening in southwestern Wisconsin is... one is the quality of life in that part of the state is very, very high. It's a very beautiful part of the state. And folks are starting to say, look, I could work in Verona at Epic and live 30 miles west. And I have to be in the office one day a week, and I'm willing to commute greater distances. You put in housing prices. I got a job in Madison. I would prefer to live in Madison, but I can get a much nicer house 20 miles outside of town. We're seeing more and more and more of that. And with the advent of remote work, even if it's, you know, 2 days a week or 3 days a week, that kind of lets people be a little bit more mobile in terms of where they live.
Thanks again for that call, Tim. Gave us a lot to talk about there. Talking to Steve Deller from UW-Madison, looking at Wisconsin's economy, Wisconsin's job scene. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Marcus is with us now in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi, Rob. So my question for your guest, sir, I guess I'm wondering how much of this with the job market is a function of that we didn't continue to develop manufacturing infrastructure and sector after NAFTA, and then they started sending the jobs over to China, versus how much of it is a function of the collective bargaining that Scott Walker eliminated?
Oh, the Scott Walker Act 10. How long have you got to talk about that one?
Well, and Right to Work as well.
That's and Right to Work. I'm not sure that that's had as much of an impact as folks have been thinking about. We can talk about that. But I think what's happening with manufacturing, I think there's two things that are happening. I think that the future of manufacturing in Wisconsin, in the U.S., is not large-scale commodity production, but rather smaller-scale, flexible manufacturing and, you know, higher quality. We can't compete with China and Southeast Asia on producing inexpensive blinds for your windows. We can't compete on that, but we can compete on specialized manufacturing. So that's one. That's growing. But also robotics. The ability of, you know, kind of substituting machines for people has just really exploded. We've talked before about robotic milking in agriculture, in dairy farming. Mm-hmm. That when that first came out, people thought, yeah, right, that's Star Trek, Star Wars type stuff. And it's become pretty popular. And I think we're seeing that in manufacturing.
So for thanks for that call, Marcus. So that for that manufacturing job, it sounds like, okay, instead of this factory hiring hundreds of people out of high school, they might be hiring dozens of people, but with more advanced training?
Correct. Correct. You need to know basic math. You need to know computer skills. You don't need to be an engineer, mm-hmm. but you need to kind of be moving in that direction a little bit. So the thing is that the person who barely made it out of high school, landing a really high-paying job at a manufacturing plant because their Uncle Joe's a union steward, those days are gone. But those manufacturing jobs are there, but you need to have some post-high school mm-hmm. education, technical schools, or some continuing education courses. Now, one of the problems with the Act 10 and the right to work is that the labor unions oftentimes was a mechanism to provide a lot of that training. They provided internships and things like that, apprenticeships. Those have kind of gone away. So we need to think about how do we make investments for that continuing training and continuing education.
Thanks again for that call, Marcus. Liz is with us now in Lyons. Liz, hello.
Hi. So my question is, I keep reading these articles about people complaining after they get out of college that they can't get hired because they don't have previous work experience in the field. Well, I think the problem is that these people don't want to train them. Somebody's got to get trained.
Liz, thanks a lot for the call. There's been this debate. The educational system, high school or college, needs to train people with these specific work skills so they're job ready when they grab that diploma versus no, employers need to be willing to train. Has that changed with a tight labor market?
I think it is. I think that employers are kind of loosening up the gap. You've heard stories about how some state governments around the country have said, you know, that job really doesn't require a college degree. Mm-hmm. And they're rethinking classification of this. And I think that's true. I do think that there's been this generational change. My parents, for example, were, you know, children of the Great Depression. And my father was, you know, kind of the culture is the company made a long-term investment in you and you made a long-term investment in the company and the company would provide professional development. I think a lot of that's gone now. Increasingly, you get into a job environment and they're not providing you with that technical training. They're basically saying, here's the manual, figure it out. And that's where we kind of need to rethink our educational system.
Liz, thanks a lot for that call. Steve, under a minute left, what is your next big unanswered question in Wisconsin's job market?
I think we need to have an honest conversation as to why we have negative net migration. Mm-hmm. I think with the recent budget debates, I think we kind of laid out our strategies, and I think those strategies are not working. This drive towards cutting services in the name of tax cuts is not working. I think we need to rethink What kind of investments do we as a state need to make in order to make Wisconsin more attractive? And at the top of that list is education, whether that's K-12, technical schools, or the UW system. We need to rethink our commitment to education.
Sounds like a preview for our next conversation. Steve, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
That's Steve Deller, professor of agricultural and applied economics at UW-Madison. He joined us to break down the results of a recent survey of Wisconsin businesses and what it tells us about Wisconsin's current and maybe future job market. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, find out how communities around the state are working to make a better life for people with dementia. Join that conversation. It's coming up tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Yesterday on the show, I invited you to share a brush with celebrity. Well, Leon responded with an email, quote, "When I worked a season at Yellowstone National Park, I heard rumors that former Colts coach Tony Dungy was visiting with his family. I thought I'd have success locating him in the cabins area, so I went looking there. Moments later, park security drove up next to me in a golf cart and stared me down. After a few tense seconds, he asked, 'You're looking for Tony, right?' I replied, 'Yes.' He said, 'Follow me.' Then it felt like an exciting spy movie when the security guard radioed his coworkers asking for Tony's exact location. Once he was located at a nearby dining hall, the security guard escorted me to Tony Dungy's table. I got to shake his hand, and I even got to say to him, 'As a Packer fan, thank you for beating the Chicago Bears in the Super Bowl.' I checked the history. That was Super Bowl 41 in 2007, Colts 29, Bears 17. The halftime show was Prince. Leon, thanks for sharing that brush with celebrity. You could share yours at ideas@wpr.org. This is Central Time.